All right, welcome everyone to the Compressed FM podcast. And this episode, we're doing a live version of a design consultation between myself and Amy. My name is James Q. Quick, and I am a JavaScript developer, speaker, and teacher.
Hello, hello. My name is Amy Dutton. I'm a UI UX designer and front-end developer.
Web development and design, who would have guessed? Well, we can do them both, even add a little zest. So turn up the volume, get ready for the best. Let's get it started in this episode of Compress.
Today, we are joined by two fabulous sponsors. Zeal is a software consultancy, and they are hiring. Vercel will meet all of your hosting needs. More from both of these later in the show.
Awesome. Usually, we kind of take a few minutes to do some chit-chat, but I think we're wanting to get right into it. What we're going to do here is a live design consultation. For people that are curious of why I'm doing this or why I'm looking for help, I think one of the biggest things that I lack in my content on my website, on my YouTube videos, all the things that I do is a next level of design, of consistency, of creativity. I've done all of my design on my website up until now. And then back in January or February, I started to work with a designer on kind of a rebrand for my personal brand, the James Q. Quick brand. I worked with her for a few months, and unfortunately, I don't really know what happened. I just kind of lost contact with her. And so I got to the point where I had a style guide from her, a couple of YouTube templates for thumbnails, and then I was looking to get into a complete redesign of my personal website. Again, to take that to the next level, to embrace this new design, the new fonts, colors, that sort of stuff. And Amy, you and I have been working a pretty good amount together on the podcast. I've gotten to see the stuff that you've done, which is 100% incredible. I think anyone who has seen your stuff obviously understands that. And we've heard lots of good feedback in the Learn, Build, Teach Discord and the design channel from your stuff and in other places. And so I've really been waiting on you to have some availability. I know like you keep a busy schedule, again, being sought after in terms of your skills. And now that you're open up, I'm super excited to start to have this conversation about my wants and needs and how we can get that stuff going.
Yeah, it'll be fun. For me, this stuff is helpful when I was beginning. A lot of times you can talk about questions to ask and things like that in theory, but until you sit in on client meetings and see somebody else do it, it's like, oh, it's just really a conversation. And I think just that act of actually doing it and getting some experience is incredibly beneficial. So that's kind of the heart and the thought behind this particular episode.
So I guess what I was going to do is give you an overview of the design guide that I have now, show you my existing website and talk through any details. And if you have questions, which obviously you will, and again, this is kind of your area here, then we'll just do it that way.
Perfect.
So Amy, I'll kind of walk you through what I have from a design guide perspective. It's probably like the basic stuff that you're used to. The biggest thing for me, I think, is the Q logo, which people can't see this, but the Q logo has like these tails on it, which implies quick, it implies speed, it implies running. And I've got an animation for that on YouTube intros, which is really dope. Like, I'm really in love with that thing. I want to make t-shirts and hoodies and all the things with that Q on it because I really love it. There's a couple of different variations of how to arrange the logo itself, as well as text, horizontal, vertical, that sort of stuff. A couple of ways to not use it. I think probably the most relevant stuff is color. So I've got three primary colors, a red, a blue, and a white, and then basically different shades of red, different shades of blue, and then getting into like light gray and white as well. So this is the entire color palette that I have, secondary color palette, and then two different fonts, one for headers and one for body text, and then a backup Google font of Montserrat in case those previous two are not available. I think that's about it. The typical stuff I think that you would expect. And what I'm looking to do is take the existing website, which I did all of this stuff together pre new design. So this is using the Poppins font, which is what I was using before. It's using the old version of my red color, and it looks fine. It's clean, it's simple, but it doesn't instill in me like this is a really, really legit website. I don't know if other people feel this way, and this is like where I don't have a great ability to articulate what I'm looking for, but I look at some people's websites and I'm like, damn, I know that person has to be good because this is next level. I feel like my stuff is simple and clean. It's kind of average. It is what it is, but I don't think it's really grabbing anyone's attention. The other aspect of this is I think it's my responsibility, and I would love kind of help from other people to really restructure the text in my site. Like, I want to be really intentional. Like, here's what you're here for. Here's what I can provide. Here's what you're going to get out of working with me or working with this website or just being here in this experience. And so all of that said, I started to do a redesign myself that I felt relatively good about for a while, and then kind of just got burnt out on it, to be honest. Again, it's something that I've gotten better at in design. It's something that I am competent, but I just don't feel like I have that next level of polish. So everything that's here, I'm not necessarily tied to. A lot of this comes from trying to use the new logo, using the new fonts, using the new colors, and then also trying to get really intentional about language. So the tagline here being, I teach developers through content, like really emphasizing right off the bat, the first thing they see is I'm a teacher, I'm a developer because I teach developers, and then I do that through content, courses, YouTube videos, live streams, podcasts, all the things. Below, I have listed out those different areas of YouTube, Twitch, individually, and podcasts. So kind of explaining to people, this is what I do, and then here's the places that you can find me and the things that you can learn type thing.
Cool. And I think for anybody listening, this is exactly where I start when I meet with a client, is just kind of figuring out what assets they have when we're starting, and then figuring out how tied they are to certain things. So we already have a logo, we already have a color palette, that's great. So that branding component is already taken care of. And so then just figuring out an assessment of what you need. So in this case, you're looking for a website redesign. And then you kind of outlined this already, but just talking about what the priority is and the messaging you're trying to communicate and the content that you're trying to present. So sometimes that looks like regurgitating what I just heard to make sure that I heard it correctly. So in this case, you were talking about teaching first and then being a developer and then the content that you have.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, because I think this gets back into what's the ultimate goal of this? Mm-hmm. Like the ultimate goal about this is probably not my blog, like SEO wise. Mm-hmm. Like I don't blog enough. So I'm not going to get, I don't think, a huge amount of just traffic to the site from SEO. But what I would like to do a better job at is converting people. So as people come to my site, I want to convert them in some way. It doesn't have to be paid. I want to convert them to go and click on the YouTube channel. I want to convert them to subscribe to a newsletter, to go to Twitch, to listen to the Compressed FM podcast. If you're here listening, thank you, by the way. So that sort of conversion of being intentional about here's what I provide and then getting people and keeping people interested in those spaces and things that I have to offer. Mm-hmm. Which there's one bigger problem that I have as a course creator. This is something I feel like I'm relatively good at. I feel like I can put a course together and do a pretty good job. I am pretty comfortable with that. I think I have not been able to sell as many courses because my design is just not there. So one of the things that's really top of mind with this website redesign is to have landing pages for all of my courses that are somewhat templatized. Like I could change out maybe colors based on the actual course itself or a logo based on the course itself. But I want to have a really solid, damn, that's a really good site for a course. So that by the time I create my next course, I have to think a lot less about creating the landing page. I already have that almost all taken care of for me, and then I can tweak some of the colors and things if I need to.
That makes sense. So ultimately, your goal is to sell courses, but you're trying to engage in the audience. So in a non-sleazy way, kind of set up those funnels so that when you release a course, the audience is there.
Yep, absolutely. And I think one of the things that comes along with that is some way to promo something that's recent. Mm-hmm. So like the site could show I teach developers through content, a picture of me to let you know who I am and where I am, but then also some sort of banner. And this is where I have no idea what best practices are to promote something that's recent. So if I just drop a course, if I start a podcast like we did a few months ago, if I'm doing a newsletter for an upcoming course, whatever it is, I think having the ability to promo that sort of thing somewhere would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'd say some of that just comes down to how you want to set that up within Sanity, if you're still using Sanity for your backend, and just being able to create, basically, I would provide like these templatized stripes of content that you could pick and choose from depending on what you're trying to promote and kind of give you different options there. And then you can swap them out based on the particular type of content.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So now it's interesting getting into a little bit of infrastructure, I guess. So I use Sanity, but only in kind of the stereotypical way of I have my blog posts, I have items for talks that I've given, I have items for the courses as well. So I want to do a better job of organizing course content in Sanity, but that's a me discussion mm-hmm. or a me sure. thing I need to do. But I haven't used it to represent blocks that go on pages and or pages themselves. And you can use that, mm-hmm. right? Like you could create a page item in Sanity that has header, subtitle, image, all that kind of stuff, and then have the design for it and just pull in the data, which I think is kind of what you're getting at, is we could have a few different templates in Sanity, the design part is on the front end, and then it pulls whatever that promo content is from Sanity itself.
That's right. And this is where the conversation's a little bit different with me, just because I have developer experience. And mm-hmm. James is a developer, so we can talk a little bit about implementation and particular types of assets that I'm going to provide. So a lot of the clients that I work with, they're not necessarily interested in the specifics of the code and things like that. They're more interested in how is that going to convert and how do I have control over that content. There was a question in the chat about what is Sanity, and it's just a headless content management system. And by headless, that just means that there's information that you plug in on the back end, and then you can use whatever you want on the front end. So in this particular case, James is using Gatsby and React, but you can connect Svelte, Vue, whatever. You're just pulling that content from Sanity.
Amy's trying to put the pressure on me to convert to Svelte now.
I'm looking at Svelte.
But I think this is, we're getting a little sidetracked, but I think Amy, you mentioned like maybe for a project in the future, you might give Svelte or SvelteKit specifically a try after we talked about SvelteKit a few episodes ago.
Yes. Yeah. I don't want to get derailed, but I do have a SaaS project, kind of a side hustle that I'm looking at, and I really do want to put Svelte on it. So that would be a big jump to go in that direction.
Nice. So keep an eye out for SaaS product announcement from Amy.
It'll be a while before I make any kind of SaaS announcement. I am happily employed by one of our sponsors. So Zeal is a software consultancy and they are hiring. They're a software consultancy and they design custom applications and develop primarily in Rails and React. They're a remote first company even before the pandemic. They're based out of Southern Oregon, but I live outside of Nashville and we have team members across the entire country. But Zeal holds a special place in my heart because, as I mentioned, I work there, but I can honestly say it's the best place that I've ever worked. And good news for you, they are hiring. So you could work with me. At Zeal, one of our core principles is bridge the gap. So we've noticed there's a gap in the industry between juniors and seniors. So we want to help juniors level up and achieve that next level within their career path. So with that in mind, I'm going to highlight a particular job that we're hiring for right now. And I'm super stoked about this. It's called the software residency. And this position is specifically for that junior designer developer that wants to be mentored, level up, and eventually become a senior. So this position is all about becoming that unicorn, for lack of a better word, but it's that person that can do UI, UX, and development. So similar to a medical residency, you'll be partnered actually with me, and we'll work together on projects. We'll also be partnering with Learn, which is a coding boot camp, and they'll provide career growth and professional development through one-on-one coaching. So I think the whole setup is pretty unique. You can find more information on the website, softwareresidency.com, and of course, I'll include a link within the show notes. Special thanks to Zeal for being a Compressed FM sponsor. Okay, one of the things that I do when I'm working with my clients, especially if they have a design project, is we start talking about style. And the best way that I found to do that is to look at other sites that they like and why. So as a trained designer, a lot of times the language that I use around white space or typography or things like that might not connect with their vocabulary. But if we can look at images together and talk about what works and what doesn't, that helps us get on the same playing field, the same vocabulary, the same definitions a whole lot faster. So James, do you have any sites, and they can be developers, they don't have to be developers, but are there sites that you like, not that you want to steal from, but just components that you really appreciate? So that can be around language, it can be around color palettes, it can be around how they highlight their information.
Yep, which I have no problem stealing all the things as well. I should have been more prepared for this, because that's an obvious question that you're going to ask. And I've done this before. I now have to go off the top of my head. Jason Langsdorf, I mean, is a legend in so many ways, from design, interactivity, and personality on his sites. I think that's really important. So Amy and I were talking about, I think before we started this, I recorded a little video for Twitter with me singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat, but related to code, basically. And I was telling her, like, one of the things I really want to do, I feel like I have a lot more personality than people ever see from me on Twitter and YouTube and other pieces of content. And I really want that to come across. I don't want to just say the stereotypical shit. Honestly, I want every small thing to have a little bit of personality. And then in addition to that, this is jason.af for anybody that wants to check this out. Jason obviously has amazing design, but he has the personality. He has the creativity where on his intro thing, he has where you can click how long of an intro you want. So you can click like a really short intro and it's like, hi, I'm Jason, I something. You can do the long one, which is like two paragraphs. That's just such a neat interactive thing. And then he also has in the top right, like he has this icon of himself and you can click on his head and that's where the menu is for his different pages, which is so dope. And then he has these like really goofy sound effects that go with it. But that's so memorable. Like when you go to that site, you're going to remember that thing, which is why it comes to mm-hmm. mind immediately. Another good example is WestBoss's pages. So WestBoss, as a content creator, I think everyone looks up to. Design skills, obviously, again, are there. He's got a very unique style of being, I don't know if grungy is the right, edgy, like probably edgy in a different way. Like I want to be a little cleaner, a little more stereotypical, kind of like you see on Jason. But the thing that WestBoss does incredibly well to me is lay out those course pages. So I think imitating layout and flow of his course pages, as well as embracing some of the textured background patterns. That's something that he does really well as well, because my design is pretty plain. Like I don't quite see yet how to add those little touches, those little extra things. And that's some of the stuff that WestBoss does really well. There's more going on than just the information that catches people's eyes. And when I look at content from people and I'm potentially gonna invest in it, this may not be the best thing to gauge it on, but the design and that feeling you get when you look at just the landing page, even if the content is unrelated to design and creating basic pages, immediately I'm all in. And I think that's the kind of emotions that I have not been able to invoke in people that come to my site to see the stuff that I have.
Mm-hmm. Have you looked at Josh Comeau? I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. His is really good too.
I think it's Comeau.
Yeah, it's Josh W. Comeau.
There's so much about this. One of the things I do want, and this is more just from a vanity standpoint, I don't know that it's super useful. I would like to have a light dark mode. That's such a neat experience. And it also, I think, just shows some versatility. And then it then gives the user immediately something to interact mm-hmm. with as well. So that's like one of those small connections the user can actually do something. Another thing I really like on Josh's site is the right-hand side where he has like a sidebar of categories and popular content. I don't know exactly what I would want there, but I do think that that could be something we could leverage to promote recent content or announcements or things like that that we talked about earlier. I think having that sidebar could be a neat way to do that.
One thing I would point out about his site, though, is it takes a little bit for the user to translate the purpose of his site. So by that, I mean yours, you very clearly say in that hero section, this is who I am, this is what I do. He doesn't have that. And the purpose of his site is more blog, so that's fine. But you would almost have to read the most recent blog titles and then see top categories, React, animation. Yep. Oh, okay, I see what this site's about. But that's putting a little bit of extra work on the user. The main reason I brought this up is there's tons of little Easter eggs in this. Like if you hover over, I think him, that little animation, those little lines kind of follow the arrow.
Oh, nice.
And then he has different things where if you sign up for their newsletter, little confetti cannons go off.
Oh, that's so cool.
There's little Easter eggs that he sprinkled throughout, which I think show personality. And that's really a big piece of this that I hear you saying, is that you want it to be obvious that who you are and what you're about, but just that personality component. And I think as a speaker, that's super important.
Agreed. Yeah, 100%. I'm glad you brought that up for this reason. And I think one of the things I am really proud of is getting to that tagline that I haven't publicly embraced anywhere, but I teach developers through content. I think after spending a lot of time trying different versions of that, I think that I really nailed that. And I think having that, to your point, on the top of my site, really big and bold, the first thing people see, I think they're going to get a lot of context out of what they're here for immediately, versus having to do a little bit of digging here on this one to figure out what it's all about.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier, I have a logo and I have colors and fonts and stuff fairly set, but I do want to add, I'm completely open still, because here's where I'm at with that. Like, I like what I have. I feel really good about it. But I think it's going to be harder for you, Amy, to ghost me. I don't expect that to happen. And so if like,
it's true.
If you make some changes now or have some suggestions now that change things, one, I'm not that invested because I don't have almost anything that's public facing using a lot of this stuff. But then also you would get to be a part of ideally like a much longer journey. So I imagine you would probably look at what I have and say, I think that's in a pretty good spot. But if you also had suggestions on like, hey, we might want to tweak this for this reason, I'm totally open to that as well.
Okay, cool. I think anytime I'm evaluating brand pieces, like if you want to go back to your PDF where the previous designer had laid out all these different assets, that's something to consider when you're talking about branding and logos and how effective they are, is considering all the different use cases. So I believe she did great in terms of mocking up the website and things like that. But here you go. You have your packaging with your Polyailer floppy disk, which I don't know how many of those you're sending out.
I know. I think that was more ironic than anything.
So that would be something to consider. Are you planning to send out physical collateral, or are you going to focus primarily on digital pieces?
Great question. So I think this was kind of a standard thing she used, not to say like you're definitely going to send these things like the floppy disk, but this was just to give an idea of here's some of the things you could do. So I absolutely want stickers. I do really wholeheartedly believe in that cue and the line pattern that goes with it. I think that's really unique, really awesome, and really representative of me and what I feel like the brand would be. So I definitely want to have stickers. I want to have some sort of swag. Like if I only buy one myself and no one else buys it, that's enough. But I'm going to wear the shit out of my logo once I get kind of settled into it. I don't really have a reason to give out business cards. I don't necessarily have a reason to have letterheads. I can't envision that really quickly. Stickers, maybe little button pins, and then t-shirts and a hoodie is kind of the stuff that I would imagine for the time being.
I knew you were going to say a hoodie.
Yes. I'm sporting the, I think every time we get on stream, I'm like, I'm gonna represent for Amy again.
That's very helpful. And especially as you think about when you go to speaking events, what are swag bag things that you want to hand out? So that's really helpful knowing about the pins and the stickers and pieces like that.
Yep.
Just for everybody's reference, I worked on a branding package one time where there were like these pastel colors and it looked great in print, but it was for an actual event and we had to do a video component with a bumper and the video looks better in black and it just is easier on the eyes, but trying to put pastels on black was, in this particular case, was very difficult because it was kind of like this light shining effect. And the way that light works in digital versus print is completely different. One's additive and one's subtractive. So it just made it very difficult. Whereas if the original designer had thought through all the different implementations and use cases, it would have been a whole lot easier.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing, again, for people out there that you're a developer and you do some design like I do, there still can be a very big difference with an actual designer who's got lots of experience, gone through lots of engagements, because those are the things that I never would I have thought about. What's the difference of how this looks in person versus versus online or whatever?
Yeah. And even just thinking through where you are, like YouTube or Twitter and things like that, your brand also needs to be able to translate into a long and skinny cover image, because that's really the only part of those platforms that you have control over. Whereas your website, I mean, it's free reign.
Which, by the way, I have used the new design on my headers for Twitter and YouTube. I don't know if you've specifically noticed that in the past. And then I think the most important thing to me is what we've been talking about, which is the website redesign. There's a layer on top of that to extend into more things on YouTube. So more things would be like a couple of templates for YouTube videos. Also things like text overlays. I could do animations potentially, but just here's what it should look like when you do this type of overlay. Things like the actual layout for the stream that we're on right now is using the new brand as well. But all of that cohesiveness and creativeness and personality injected into it across all those platforms is something a little bit longer term that is in the back of my head at the very least.
Yeah, that's great. Cool. Let's take a brief break for one of our sponsors, Vercel. We couldn't do this podcast without their support. Vercel will meet all of your hosting needs, and we're actually hosting the compressed.fm site and my personal site, selfteach.me, on Vercel. They also power more well-known sites like Twilio, but you can use them for e-commerce, travel, news, and marketing sites. You name it, and they can host it. When I got ready to launch the compressed site, it was super easy. I pointed it to the GitHub repository and told it what folder my next.js project was in, and then it just worked. Ridiculous, right? But they also power over 30 plus Jamstack frameworks, including Create React App, Next, Nuxt, Vue, Ember, Svelte, Angular, Hugo, and Gatsby, just to name a few. But one of my favorite features is when you set up your account, you get your own dashboard. So here you can invite other team members to collaborate or view analytics. So as soon as I push code to my GitHub repository, it deploys that code and I can watch the build and its entire process through their custom dashboard. So be sure to check out Vercel. I'll include a link in the show notes, but special thanks to Vercel for being a compress.fm sponsor. Do you have any more sites off the top of your head that resonate with the look and feel?
Yeah, Supabase and Amplify. Supabase has a great color that I love, the mint green color. It works very well. This is probably getting more into the stereotypical clean and simple. So I don't think this gives as much in the way of personality, but clean and simple, the dark mode, especially here with the mint green. Also, this is probably not super relevant to me, but a lot of the products do this where they have a basic demo video that shows on their sites as well as the header. I probably don't need a video, but I think in this case, that's a good representation, a good thing for people to have, because I, as a video creator, like that's where I learn best. Mm-hmm. So that I think is always nice. Amplications. The same reason, like it's dark mode by default, but they've got this purple color. Again, I love these. May like come from a Tailwind template because these are almost the exact same, where they have the video on the right, the header stuff on the left. I like the animated type text where it types it out, deletes it, types it again. I always thought that was super, super cool. That's why I like that. But the purple color, I think used sparingly makes it pop when it is used. I think one of the things I haven't done as good of a job at is using my one main red brand color too much and not letting it be used for emphasis. Mm-hmm. Is that something I've struggled with mm-hmm. a little bit?
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit in the design episode of the podcast, mm-hmm. and we can include a link to that. But red is usually associated with an error. And so mm-hmm. if you use it in too many places, it just looks like there's errors all over your page. But if you think about it, there is YouTube, and red is their main brand color. So it's kind of interesting to go to their site and see how they've implemented those different pieces within their UI, UX. One thing that I found out the other day was they actually have an alternate version of their red color for different pieces so that it's more accessible, that their particular yeah. logo color isn't even an accessible red on white or on black. But that would be something that we could look at with your brand. But I think with that kind of cool gray, that blue, that you'd be okay with some different options.
Yep. I'm glad you brought up accessibility. That's one of the things I wanted to make sure that the colors as they are now make sense. And then how do you combine them and then still combine them in a way that is accessible? Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times that looks like using different shades of the same color mm-hmm. so that you still feel like you're on brand, or possibly even finding a third color to offset that red.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. And that's where, again, I'm totally open to the colors that I have of being tweaked, adding one, removing one, whatever. I'm just mm-hmm. open to it all.
Cool. Let's see. Are there any YouTubers that you have in mind in terms of branding?
I think this is more a video editing thing, but Coder Jess, her channel has blown up in the last year. She's amazing. I think it's either boyfriend or husband. I'm not sure. I think he's into video editing and helps her do a lot of that mm-hmm. stuff. And her stuff just looks absolutely incredible. Anya Kubo, if you've ever watched her stuff, is fantastic as well. She's really good about having things pop on the screen, having them move around, that sort of stuff. Also, Jesse from the Code Stacker channel is very good at that mm-hmm. too. He's just really into video editing and he just makes it all look fun. Mm-hmm. There's something moving and drawing your attention at all times, which I think makes a big difference. It's probably a little less relevant to just a design conversation. So I'd have to think a little bit about who really embraces their design across the board in different ways. One thing that does come to mind is, I don't know if he's the co-founder or just the founder, Simon from Feedhive. Mm-hmm. He posts code snippets and they're like branded code snippets. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that I would like to have too, is these are the colors that I'm going to use for code snippets that I create and just have those look really good. I followed some people on Instagram a while back before my Instagram got killed, and they would post these either code snippets or like pieces of advice, but they would do them in such a branded way that they were consistent. where it's almost you could look through, not see who posted it, and know who posted it by the way it looks and feels. Those are a few different scenarios where that consistency and having those templates built out would be huge.
Yeah, that's great. So in terms of your site, let's just talk through all the different sections that you have in mind. So for people listening, a lot of times this will look like pages and just asking a client what pages they have in mind. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they say about page, I write down about. They say this, I write down this. Some of it is just getting an idea of what's in their head and what the expectations are. And then that kind of opens the door for me to be able to have a conversation and provide a little bit more strategy on the architecture side.
Yeah. So the ones that I have up here, I've got the stereotypical stuff. I've got the homepage, a blog page for blog posts, although I haven't blogged in a long time. I've got a page for my streams, which I haven't done as good a job as updating as I would like to. Talks, again, haven't done as good of a job of updating this, especially since COVID. I'm virtual stuff. I just cared less about putting on there. Courses, contact, newsletter, uses. So like my gear and stuff listed out. And then I don't actually publicly share this, so you just have to know the URL, but it's like a resources page for like recommended courses and things that I've been a part of. The one, again, going back to like a personality thing, I don't feel like blog, streams, talks, courses, contact, I don't feel like that adds personality. So that's one of the things that I'm totally open to not doing it that way, because it's dry. It's just kind of stereotypical. I would also like to have an about page. I think part of the reason I haven't done some things is just not wanting to try to figure out how to design them and make them look cool. So having someone do a lot of that work or provide a lot of structure for that makes it a lot easier.
One thing, have you considered doing a digital garden type setup? I think Joel Hooks might have this on his site. But basically the concept of you have your blog posts and different pieces organized by content, like category types instead of chronological dates. And the nice thing is it helps structure your content a little bit more. If somebody's new coming into your site, if they're, say, a beginner, they can find those articles. It also lifts maybe pieces that you wrote a long time ago that are really good, brings those to the forefront. But then the third benefit of that is, if you haven't written a post in 2 months, it's not like somebody comes to your site and says, man, this place is a ghost town. Because you have that digital garden, they feel like, oh yeah, there's plenty of content here that I can find what I'm looking for and what I need.
I haven't thought about that. And I think you kind of addressed this. I still debate a little bit about how much effort to put into that, considering I'm not putting in the effort to create the content. I think some people actually take off their dates for that purpose. Yep. One of the things that could be interesting that I've never really seen anybody do is do an aggregate garden of YouTube videos, articles, podcast episodes. That'd be really neat.
Because I think you have tons of content. And so if you...
Just not as much written content.
Right. Truly aggregate all that. When you start saying like Svelte, you have several videos on Svelte. You can pull that in. I think that's really helpful.
Yeah.
You could even make use of different icons to say, hey, this is a podcast episode. This is a video. This is a stream. That way somebody knows just at a glance what type of content they're clicking on.
Yep. That's a great thing that you brought up too. I think a standard set of icons that are custom created would be pretty dope. Awesome.
Okay. Saw a few questions in the chat that I'll answer. Somebody was asking just about nitpicking and just getting too many chefs in the kitchen. I think some of it depends on how you frame those conversations. So for example, I was working on a client project this week and we're having to go to the stakeholders and the executive board and present different options with them. And we went to one meeting, it was earlier in the week, where we showed them all the different options and we're kind of hoping that they would approve a particular direction. But it was more in the meeting like, hey, pick one for us. That was the wrong attitude to take. So at the end of the week, we had another meeting with even people higher up than that. But we came in and said, hey, we user tested all these things. This is what we discovered. This is our recommendation. And immediately it was approved. There was very, very little nitpicking, but it was all about our attitude and how we came in. So that's not to say that the client, the end user, doesn't have any say in those things. But a lot of times I found as we're talking through this and we're talking about goals that you have, different branding elements and pieces like that, when I present a design, I'll point and say, hey, this came from when we talked about this. And that's one of the things I like about design is it's a lot more logical and you can think through and talk through all of those different decisions that you make. It's not just, oh, I felt like red would look good here. It's this is your brand color and this is accessible. So that helps curb a lot of those conversations. Okay, so this is the last part of every meeting. What I'll do is I'll talk about next steps, because as the consultant or the designer, you want to make sure that you're leading the conversation. You're not just allowing the client to dictate all those pieces. And so what I would tell James, and what I will tell James, is what I will do is I'll take all this information. I've been writing notes the whole time on little stickies. So I'll go and write up a lot of that information. And what I present James, I'll regurgitate a lot of that. It might sound silly. It's like, we just had a conversation. Why are you documenting that? But it helps make sure that we're on the same page. One of the big things that I strive to do is to make sure that there's no surprises, so that when he sees the design or, you know, paperwork or something like that, he's like, where'd this come from? We didn't talk about that. And so the more that I can communicate that back to him, shows him that I understand we're on the same page, or it gives him a chance to step up and say, that's not what I had in mind. So I'll kind of summarize all that within an email. And I'll also create a formal estimate. So in the freelancing podcast, we talk a lot about pricing and different options that you have there. The main format that I've leaned on is kind of a hybrid. So I charge $100 an hour, but when I go to a project, I'll say, okay, this is about how many hours that I think this project will take. And then I use a hybrid to figure out what that round project number estimate is. And the benefit is James comes in and he knows this project is going to be $5. I'm lowballing, but this project's going to be $5. That way,
sold.
When I send an invoice, he's not surprised. Where did you get this $5 from? He knows I agreed to this on the front end, however much time it takes. And then it's my job to make sure that the project stays in scope. If it's not in scope, that's my fault for saying that I would do something that fell outside of the scope.
So we're committed to $5. Which I did want to be very clear with people. Like, this is an actual legitimate paid engagement. I don't expect especially to have a $5 rate. I'm fully prepared to pay the value of what this is. And that's one of the things that I've learned myself. I'm historically super cheap, and I've always taken the cheapest route with almost everything. But honestly, as I have more disposable income for this type of stuff, I'm more and more comfortable paying for quality things. And everything that I've seen you do just guarantees it for me that this is the right decision for me to go to get to that next level that I want to.
Well, and a huge part of that too is understanding it's an investment. So James knows, mm-hmm. if we can get these branding pieces in line with the course pages and things like that, ultimately he should sell more courses. So it's not like he's out this money. And that's also my job as the designer, and talking about marketing strategy and digital strategy, is to be able to come back around and figure out how those conversions have helped him. And that's really what sells somebody. James has come in and kind of self-diagnosed the problem and said, I need better branding or a better website. And that's kind of his diagnosis. But then I take all that information and say, okay, how can we develop these funnels, or how can we develop the language and all these pieces so that it all works together?
Absolutely. Amy, I can't wait for next steps. Maybe I will, as a follow-up to this, whatever our next steps are, tweet a little bit about that as a follow-up for people that may be interested. And maybe we do an episode down the line of, here's what came of it, here's how the process went, here's how much it cost, again, for like full transparency for people that are interested. Mm-hmm. So if you have any of those questions, feel free to use the Compressed FM handle on Twitter and or tag each of us individually.
So in this next section, it's one of our favorites. It's picks and plugs, where we pick something that we like and we plug something that we've done. So James, do you have a pick for the week?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Rode Video Micro on camera mic. And this is basically, if you want to get like a relatively cheap mic to improve the audio that comes into your camera and or your phone, if you want to use your phone to record, this is a pretty easy way to do that. So it's about $60, I think, on Amazon. You can check out the link and check out the price. But again, a little easy way to add some better audio to whatever your setup is. And if you're using a phone, for example, one of the things you'll need is some sort of mount. So this uses a cold shoe mount, which I have no idea why it's actually called that, but those are standard mounts that are included on cameras and other things, but your phone doesn't actually have that. So you need to buy a separate mount to be able to connect this microphone to your phone. So a little teaser here, if you want to know what mount I'm about to get for myself and then recommend for you in the next episode, that'll be my pick in the next episode. And then for plug, I'll plug my YouTube channel. I've been doing weekly web development related videos for the past 3 or 4 years or so, which has been a lot of fun. Recently did some work with SvelteKit, and then also have an upcoming video on handling file uploads with one of our previous sponsors, which is Quez Forms. And I like them a lot. Happy to share some of their cool features with people. So James Q Quick on YouTube. Amy, what about you for picks and plugs?
Well, first, I'm going to explain what a cold shoe and a hot shoe are.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
So a hot shoe is like, it looks like these little grooves on top of your camera that you can just slide something on. So if it's a hot shoe, it's connected to your camera and you can feed it for like a flash. So it'll sync with your lens and shutter as it's flashing. A cold shoe, the mount looks the exact same, but it's not connected to your camera. So it'll just kind of be a standalone thing. So for a microphone, it makes sense because you have an audio jack going in. So that's the difference.
Cool. Yeah, I didn't know if it was just they heat them up for a little bit. That's the worst, cheesiest joke I've got.
No, one's connected and one's not, but the mount looks the same.
Got it. Makes sense.
So my pick for the week is the Fuse Reel Sidewinder. And I don't know about you, but if I have my Mac charger and in the cable, it's usually everywhere. The cable is just all over the place. It's cumbersome. I mean, you're having to roll it up every time you want to put it in your bag and go somewhere, whatever. So this particular winder, your charger like fits into it and then you just turn it and it'll wind up your cable really fast. So this is Facebook marketing at its best. I bought it. I love to travel with it and it keeps my cord nice and clean. The other nice thing about it is my cords tend to get frayed or bent right on the edge. And so that helps protect that little connecting piece. I'll include a link in the show notes. And then my plug for the week is I'm going to plug the Compressed.fm newsletter. James and I have been planning some fun content around Compressed. And so you'll see some new things come out only if you are subscribed to the newsletter. So if you go to Compressed.fm, there's a form on the site and you should sign up.
Go do it now. So I guess that's all we have.
You want to do a jingle about that?
I get maybe. In theory, I want to do jingles for everything, and I just haven't sat down and done it. I think we should include this, a little teaser. By the time this was out, the official Auth0 rap music video will be launched on the Auth0 YouTube channel. Yeah, it'll be live. So people that's should go exciting. And check out Auth0 on YouTube and check out the rap video that we put together.
Very cool. And that is rap, R-A-P, not rat,
yes. R-A-T. Yes, and not rap, W-R-A-P.
Yes.
Hilarious. It just gets weirder. All right, that is all we have for today. In the next episode, we are going to talk, really Amy's going to talk, do most of the talking, all about Figma and get into design, Figma as a tool, her favorite things, and everything that you could think of. So thanks, as always, for listening to us and hanging out with us on the Compressed FM podcast. We'll catch you next time. In the meantime, that's all we got.